The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pear.com.
You're listening to The Murder in My Family, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including Missing Persons,
DNA ID,
Scene of the Crime,
Zodiac Speaking,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
Citizen Detective,
and
Campus Killings.
All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the podcast, its host, or sponsors.
If you would like to discuss the murder in your family on this podcast, please be sure to visit themurderinmyfamily.com for more information.
You can support this podcast by visiting patreon.com/themurderinmyfamily. This episode may contain unsettling material or subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of The Murder in My Family. I'm your host, Mike Morford.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the case of a man who was shot to death one night while he traveled down the highway at 70 miles per hour. His loved ones have been left to wonder, was he targeted and ambushed, or was he the victim of a sniper who was taking pot shots at passing vehicles?
We'll dive into this case after some quick housekeeping. Independent podcasts like this one depend on word of mouth to bring in new listeners. So if you find that you enjoy the show, please take a moment to rate and review it wherever you listen to your podcast. And be sure to introduce a friend to the show and invite them to listen. With your help, The Murder of My Family can continue to grow and reach a new audience. To learn more about the show or the cases we discuss, please visit themurderofmyfamily.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @MurderMyFam or on Facebook at facebook.com/TMIMFpodcast. If you'd like to support this show through a Patreon donation, it's always appreciated, and you can do so by visiting patreon.com/themurderofmyfamily. Benefits of supporting the show on Patreon may include early access to ad-free episodes of the show, plus bonus content not heard in regular episodes. Support may also include thank you cards, stickers, and more. In each episode, I'll give shout-outs to any new supporters. And thank you to all of the supporters that generously donate to help keep the show growing and improving. One last note. Please support any of the sponsors that you hear on The Murder of My Family the way that those sponsors support the show. It's with our sponsor support that this show can go on and continue to provide a platform to share these stories with you in every episode. Thank you. And now on with the show.
Jesse Miles Dempsey of Lithonia, Georgia, was born on August 23, 1979, to parents Gayla and John. He went on to have three children of his own, Ben, Cora, and Emma. He loved to ride his motorcycle and was an avid hunter and fisherman. He also enjoyed playing soccer, and he was a handy kind of guy installing garage doors for a living. Jesse also had a close relationship with his girlfriend Kendra Vickery. They were longtime friends and eventually started dating, and they were a couple for years. Not long before Jesse died, he and Kendra had broken up. They eventually began to see each other again after a 6-month separation. But Kendra was troubled to learn that Jesse had fallen in with a bad crowd of people during their breakup. That was concerning for her because Jesse was a convicted felon, and she wanted him to steer clear of trouble. Although she wasn't quite sure what Jesse and the crowd he was hanging with were into, she was worried. On October 26, 2020, Jesse and Kendra went to visit her father's grave. He had died on that same day 17 years earlier, so it was a somber day. On the way home, they stopped at a Popeyes to get chicken sandwiches and then headed home. Jesse was driving Kendra's white GMC Sierra pickup truck while she rested in the front passenger seat. What happened next happened in the blink of an eye, and it was very chaotic. At close to 11 p.m., the couple were cruising eastbound down I-20 at about 70 miles per hour, coming into Lithonia. About a half mile before the Panola Road exit, according to Kendra, she heard an explosion and thought that one of the truck's tires had blown out. Somehow, Jesse slammed on the brakes and came to a stop in the middle lane of the busy highway. Before Kendra even realized what happened, their truck was violently struck from behind by another vehicle, which forced the truck to roll forward. Kendra grabbed the steering wheel and somehow guided the truck over to the shoulder of the road, in shock over the chaos of what just happened. She quickly grabbed her cell phone and dialed 911. As she did, she smelled what she thought was smoke and burning rubber. She looked over at Jesse, who was slumped over in the seat, and he appeared to be unconscious. As she connected to 911, she noticed that the truck's back window was gone. It would later be determined that it had been shot out. When she was on the phone with 911, she noticed blood running down the driver's side headrest and from Jesse's head. It turned out that Jesse had been struck by a single bullet that apparently passed through the back window of the truck and then entered through the back of the driver's side headrest before striking Jesse in the back of his head. Still in shock, Kendra couldn't process what was going on. She tried to get out of the truck by opening the door, but couldn't, so she climbed out through the passenger side window to escape. By now, all the traffic on the highway had come to a stop. Police and EMTs were dispatched to the scene. They arrived and determined that Jesse still had a pulse but was barely alive, and he was rushed to the hospital. And it turns out that Jesse wasn't the only victim that night. 39-year-old Marie Floriston, the driver of the car that hit Jesse's truck from behind, apparently got out of her damaged vehicle, either to look at the damage or to check on Jesse and Kendra, and she ended up being struck and killed instantly by a semi-truck. It was a horrible scene, one that police had to sort out. Kendra was taken to the police station to be questioned. From the questions she was asked, she felt that they suspected her somehow, or that she knew who was responsible. The questioning went on for hours. It wasn't until very far into the night that police told her, "You may as well tell us what happened. Jesse is dead." 41-year-old Jesse Dempsey had died sometime before they actually told Kendra he was dead, yet they continued to question her. Eventually, she was released and ruled out as being involved in her boyfriend's death, and she was left to try and pick up the pieces and deal with her grief. Almost immediately, Kendra wondered if Jesse had been targeted, perhaps by one of the people he had been mixed up with. She found out later that shortly before he was killed, Jesse's dad saw a man on a motorcycle that had come to Jesse's property and made a threat against him. Also troubling for Kendra was that she later found out that someone claiming to be the fiancé of Marie Floriston, who was killed by the semi, knew Jesse, and according to Kendra, this man's phone number was in Jesse's phone. Kendra said she was even more troubled when she found out this man was not Marie Floriston's fiancé as he had claimed. Kendra wondered if perhaps there might be more than meets the eye with Marie Floriston, and wondered how it was that she came to be behind their truck that night. But I think I need to point out here that there have been multiple reports of people having their back windows shot out on I-20 eastbound. In May 2021, 6 months after Jesse was shot, another driver had their back windows shot out, but thankfully was unharmed. And in October 2017, 3 years before Jesse was killed, another woman was shot on I-20 by the passenger of another vehicle who was driving alongside her. She later died at the hospital. The shooter in that incident was identified and arrested. But most recently, in February 2023, a 29-year-old man was shot as he was driving westbound on I-20 by an unknown shooter. Could there be a single sniper who had been prowling this area along I-20? Or are there multiple shooters? Authorities haven't released the caliber of bullet that killed Jesse, so it's unknown what kind of gun they fired. At the end of the day, Jesse's friends and family are left to wonder, was he targeted or the victim of a random sniper? Whoever shot him has gotten away with murder to this point, and they're also responsible for the death of Marie Floriston. If you have any information about the murder of Jesse Dempsey, which caused a multi-car collision, and the death of Marie Floriston, or any of the shootings along that stretch of Interstate 20, you can contact the DeKalb County Police Department, East Precinct, at 770-482-0300. I sat down to talk about Jesse's troubling case with his girlfriend Kendra, and she told me about the horrible events of that night that changed her life forever and took her boyfriend from her. That conversation is coming up in just a moment.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, Kendra, and thank you for coming on the Murder My Family to talk about your boyfriend Jesse's case with us.
Hi, Mike. Hi, I'm glad to be here.
I'm happy to have you here, and I'm hoping we can help you get some answers here. This is a real tragic story. I know it's one that hasn't been resolved. There's a lot of twists and things we need to get into. Before we do, can you tell us a little bit about Jesse and help us get to know him a little bit, what he was like?
Sure. I knew Jesse for approximately 25 years. He was my brother's best friend growing up. He was a wonderful person. He was mischievous, though. He liked to push the limits a little bit. But he had a heart of gold. He played soccer in high school and a little bit out of. He had three kids, two girls and one son. He was a good person and had a good heart. But like I said, he liked to get into things, you know, unlike some of us, you know, he pushed the limits a little too far sometimes. He would get in trouble, but it was nothing big until, you know, this last episode with what happened.
Did he have a lot of friends? Was he pretty friendly, on good terms with a lot of people?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. He had a lot of friends. He was very loving and caring, and he was a great friend. Other than that, you know, I don't know what else I could tell you. He just had a heart of gold.
Anybody that he didn't get along with, any enemies or anyone that might, you know, have a reason to harm him?
You know, I don't really know. I had left 6 months before this all happened. I had left him, and he got into the Atlanta crowd, and it wasn't a very good crowd. I do know that he was doing some criminal activity with them. I don't know what all he was doing, but I just had a little bit of, you know, sent a little bit of the information. He didn't tell me a whole lot, and I think a lot of that was to keep me safe. But before that, we'd been together for 4 years. He had not had any enemies that I know of.
Hmm. So you felt he mixed up with the wrong crowd and may have gotten involved in some things that he shouldn't have been involved with.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. And I don't know exactly what all that was, but I know that, some of that probably made him some enemies. You're right.
Sure. Now, did you get back together with him? I know on the day he died, you were with him. Were you back together as a couple or just as friends?
Well, we were just saying friends, but it was actually, you know, a little more than that. I had come back 2 months before he was murdered. You know, he like I said, he didn't tell me a whole lot of what he had done, you know, 6 months that I was gone. But I have an idea, a little bit of an idea. I threw myself into researching after he was killed. More than I think than the police did, truthfully.
That's not good to hear when somebody, you know, connected to a case or has a loved one that's murdered is doing more than you think the police are doing. Let's go back to the day this whole tragedy happened. It was October 25th, 2020. In your own words, can you tell us how things happened, how they unfolded, where you were coming from, where you were going, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
And exactly what happened?
I can. Like you said, October 25th, 2020, we had actually gone to visit my dad's grave and to see one of his of friends first in Atlanta. And then we went and visited my dad's grave. He had died 17 years before that on that same day. And it was the nighttime. It had gotten dark and we were actually on our way home. We went through and got a chicken sandwich at Popeye's. And I was slouched down in the seat. He was driving my GMC truck. We got on the expressway, which is I-20 here in Atlanta. And we're on our way home. And all of a sudden, we're in the middle lane. And all of a sudden, I heard a loud boom. You know, you don't think that, you know, I thought my tire blew because he was supposed to, put new tires on my truck the following day. So somehow we stopped in the middle lane. And all I can remember is smelling rubber and seeing smoke. I don't remember. I mean, I can't even explain to you what was going through my mind. I don't really know. But I did look over and we came to a stop. And as soon as we came to a stop, we were hit by another vehicle from behind very fast. I looked over and he was unconscious. And I couldn't, I didn't understand why, you know, if my tire blew, why would he be unconscious? So I can remember going, oh my goodness. And we started moving again. And I took the wheel and I got us over to the side of the shoulder of the highway. And as soon as I got over to the shoulder of the highway, we got hit again from behind. And I remember I was looking for my phone and I finally found my phone and I dialed 911. And the lady, the operator, I told her what was going on. And she said, do you see any blood? And I said, no, I don't. And that's when I looked around and saw the back window shot out. And I looked over at him and there was blood going down the headrest. And that's when I knew, because she said that she shot. And I said, yes, he is. And he was still unconscious. I waited on the ambulance to come. And I don't remember a whole lot of this, but I do know that I couldn't get out of the truck because it was against the guardrail, my side. So I climbed out of the window. And by this time I was screaming and in shock. And I just hit the ground. And the next thing I remember is the police came and said, did you know there's a gun? They yelled at me and said, do you know there's a gun in the truck? I said, no, I do not know that. And I didn't know that. I had no idea. And Jesse, if he ever carried a gun, he would lock it in my console because he was a felon. You know, he couldn't carry a gun. And normally I would know if he had one, but he did. You know, I didn't. So anyway, they came and they said he had a slight heartbeat, which I knew that he wasn't going to make it when I saw him, you know, when I was getting out of the truck, I just knew. And they said that he has a slight heartbeat. And then they came, the ambulance came and rushed him to Grady. And they came up to me, the detective, and asked if I would go to the precinct and answer some questions. I didn't know that I didn't have to do that. I had no clue. I've never been in, of course, the situation ever. I did end up going and they interrogated me for 6 hours. I had to give up my phones. I mean, I was treated really poorly and I know that they have to have, you know, I'm a suspect, of course, I understand that until they know what's going on, but they should have known by looking at the scene that, you know, I had no clue and I was traumatized. But they interrogated me for 6 hours and they would not tell me if he was okay. 4 hours into being there, they came in, and this is how they told me, is they said, Ms. Vickery, you can tell us now because he's no longer with us. And I just cannot even believe he passed away at midnight, and they came and told me 4 hours later. And I just, I can't believe that. That was ridiculous to me. That's why I don't trust these detectives, but I've tried to work with them. I've worked with them for, it'll be 3 years in October, and I've given them all the information that I find out. I've tried to work with them, and to no avail, none at all.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I just want to go back because this is so much to hear the story from you. It sounds like something out of a movie or something almost. So
it's
I'm just
trying
to, I'm trying to recap. So you're driving down the road, full speed on a highway, 70 miles an hour, whatever it is. You hear something that you think is a tire blowing out. It's obviously the window being shot. I'm curious. It was through the back window. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And it struck the headrest of the front driver's seat that Jesse was driving.
Right.
And hit him in the back of the head, one shot, correct?
One shot, yes.
Okay. I'm curious, and obviously you didn't know this at the time, but since this has happened, did they determine what kind of gun this was? Was this a rifle? Was this a handgun? What kind of bullet caused this? Do you know?
They wouldn't tell us. They won't tell us anything. We still haven't even gotten his belongings back from them.
Okay. Okay.
No, they won't tell us, but his dad... John is actually he knows his guns, and he believes it was AR-15 or or some kind of machine, you know, MP3 or whatever. I don't even know what the name of that, like a military gun.
Some kind of rifle, it sounds like.
Right.
Okay. And then so you had mentioned the window was shot. Now, was it just a hole in the window or was the entire window missing?
Whole window was shot out.
Okay, so the window shot out, it strikes him in the back of the head through the headrest, and that's what ultimately kills him. I'm curious, you know, obviously they would want to talk to you and get details from you, but at the same time, how could they think that you had done this if the bullet came from outside the window? While you were driving, how would they think it was you that, you know, why would you be a suspect? Unless they thought maybe you knew who may have done it, something along those lines.
Right.
But it seems impossible that you could have been the one that shot it. So why they would have even treated you like a suspect is kind of strange.
Do you know what they did ask me? There were some strange questions they asked when I was there. And one of them in which was, did the shot come from inside of the truck or outside of the truck? And I couldn't understand why they were asking me something like this. So I don't know. I really don't know what they were thinking. And I'm sure they thought that I probably had an idea of what he had been doing in his criminal activities. You know, and they probably did think that, but I did not. You know, I did not know. I mean, this was a total shock. To me,
sure.
A nightmare.
Well, I'm picturing this whole thing playing out in my mind. It's, you know, you mentioned it was dark. He's driving 70 miles per hour. Now, I'm wondering. You know, it seems like there's only a couple possibilities. One, this is someone that knew that he'd be driving down that road, but then they have to make this quick shot at 70 miles an hour. I wonder if it was just somebody random shooting at cars, just messing around, or maybe they were target shooting someplace and accidentally the bullet went too far. It seems very hard to believe that someone could hit a truck at night 70 miles an hour aiming for Jesse in the driver's seat. Have they talked about the possibility that this was just a random or accidental shooting and not someone targeting Jesse specifically?
Well, that police says that what they say is that it was not random, that it was possibly it was a hit. And I'll go back and tell you, I didn't find this out until after this happened. Of course, Jesse's dad told me, the police and me, that he had been threatened, and someone had come. I don't know where I was, but someone had come up on a motorcycle, a red motorcycle, and come, and they were like, Jesse and his dad were putting the fence up at the top of the driveway because we live on 10 acres. So they were at the very top of the driveway, and they came, and his dad don't know what they said, but when they were riding away, they said, well, I'm going to get you for this. So that's another reason why we think it wasn't just random.
So if it, let's just say for a second that it was targeted, that somebody was looking for Jesse specifically, it seems, you know, hard to hit a vehicle going 70 miles an hour in the dark.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd have a easier chance, you know, if they wanted to hurt him, doing it up close and in the light, not 70 miles an hour at night. So unless they somehow were there waiting and happened to see that car and they could see it in the dark and all that, it seems hard to mm-hmm. think that it could have been planned. Although maybe they were in a car behind you following you guys and shot out the window. I mean, who knows? But it's just a very strange situation. Mm-hmm. I talk about a lot of different cases all the time, and all kinds of strange stuff happens, so it's not impossible, but it just seems more likely that if somebody was targeting him, they could have easily killed him up close without right. trying to shoot at a truck 70 miles an hour. So I'm very curious. And then, you know, this is, we didn't even mention this, but this is a real tragedy too, because you've got this whole accident that happened, but then one of the drivers of the other car stepped out of her car and was hit by a semi truck and killed. Did you see that happen?
No, I did not. Thank goodness. I did not.
No. So this is just terrible. Then this is a second person loses their life, at the same scene.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. She got out of her car, from what I've understood. She got out of her car. I don't know why. It was on a busy expressway. I don't know. I don't know why, really, but the news saying that, you know, she was getting out to check, on us or him. But I think we were being followed, to go back to your question. Truthfully, I think that we had been followed that night. The friend that we went and saw before we went to my dad's grave, they were acting very strange. And we had both of us, Jesse and I both had bad vibes at that time. So I'm thinking that maybe we were set up.
So maybe they knew where you were. They were following you and shot perhaps out of a car or something. Did any of the other witnesses that were there stop and stuff? Did anybody see anybody following you or shooting at you? Anything unusual like that?
No. The only thing that I was told is that when someone did see a Dodge truck speed away, that's the only thing that the detectives would tell me that night, because they asked if I knew anybody that drove one. And I did. And it was my soon-to-be ex-husband, because I was going through a nasty divorce. For 5 years, I went through this divorce with him. And so that puts in my mind, you know, at that time, and I'm not saying that he did. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying, I'm stating what the detectives did tell me. So that made me think twice about, well, maybe was I supposed to be the target? You know, I don't know. I really don't know.
Especially because it's your truck too. So maybe somebody's thinking that it was you driving the truck and not Jesse.
That's what I'm saying, Mike. I know.
Yeah. So that's gonna be scary.
It's very wow. I was very scared. Very scared. So-
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pair.com today to learn more. That's pair.com.
So I'm wondering now if somebody did this intentionally and not only killed Jesse, now this other driver got out of their car and was killed. I wonder if this person could be charged with this woman's death too as being a murderer, since it all happened because of what happened to Jesse. Have they said anything about whether this woman's death might be turned into a murder as well?
Oh, I'm sure it will, but they haven't. They won't tell us anything. They won't. I mean, it's been 3 years, excuse me. And there's the gun that Jesse had was his dad's. We are yet to get that back. They lost two of my phones that were in my truck. Jesse was, using one of them. DeKalb County has lost my phones and now a gun. So I don't trust this department very well, very much. I feared for my life, and I still do at some point to a degree, and that's from being traumatized. But I feared for my life for a long time. You know, I wouldn't leave at nighttime because I was scared, it's just a lot to take in. But going back to the lady that got out of her vehicle, I think it's a setup, truthfully. And I think she's involved. I think that she's involved. Later on, I found out that right after it happened, her fiance, so-called fiance's sister, got in touch with me on Messenger and wanted to pay his condolences. So gave me his number and I called him and gave my condolences. He gave me his. He was telling me that he was on the phone with her when she was struck and killed, which is horrible. Oh my goodness. Well, 6 months later, I threw myself into researching I still do it at some point, but I was obsessed. I think that's how I grieved. But I was into doing the research and saw that Jesse knew her fiance because he was one of his contacts, not only one number, but two numbers and an address. So that's what I'm saying. That may be a link right there.
Wow. And did the police talk about that at all? Did they mention that or have they questioned him as far as you know?
I don't know. I tell them everything that I find out. And that's one thing that hit me really hard when I found that out. And I also got in touch with her ex-husband, and they were not even, that wasn't her fiance. They were broken up. Not what I was told to begin with. No. The police will not tell me anything. I have to tell them. And then they, how that goes.
Sure. And you mentioned that they sort of questioned you like you were a suspect, like you had some information or you had something to do with it. Right. Did they ever officially clear you and say, okay, we know you're not involved? Give you that? Okay.
Yes. Yes, definitely. And it wasn't, I know that everyone has to be a suspect at first, but like you said, there was no way looking at at everything, the truck and everything, they shouldn't have known that to begin with. And I don't know why I was treated that way. I was very horrified because I was already in shock going through what I was going through.
And I know sometimes in cases like this, afterwards you start hearing rumors or rumblings or somebody starts running their mouth. Was there anything that was talked about? Did it come to your attention about anyone that was talking about being responsible or having information about what happened?
I have actually heard a couple of things, and they won't come forward, of course, but it was talked about that maybe it was because of a stolen motorcycle. The group that he was running with for that 6 months, I found out that they were actually stealing motorcycles and parting them out. So that's what I heard. And I've told the police everything that I found out, but the detective told me not long ago that the only way we're going to solve this is when someone gets mad at someone else and talks.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yes.
Or gets in trouble and they want to get themselves out of trouble. So they say, hey, you know, if you get me out of trouble, I'll tell you what I know about Jesse's death. Sure. That makes sense. Do you feel, you said that the police haven't always, you know, done a fair job as far as you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Do you feel maybe it's because Jesse, you know, had some criminal activity in his past, mm-hmm. and they sort of are treating him like a second class citizen?
Yes, I do. You hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what we think, is that he had a criminal mind, and that's exactly what they're doing. They're going, oh, he doesn't mean, that's what we feel. That's what they're treating this case like. But when this all began, the first detective, he was the lead detective on this case. He actually, within the first month, he resigned out of DeKalb County. So then it wasn't even picked up by another lead detective. It like all of a sudden just they made this a cold case. And so I fought for a year and a half to get another lead detective on the case. And I finally succeeded. But I thought that was going to make a difference, but it hasn't, because they tell me they're so slammed and so busy that they don't have time to do all this. And that's not right. You know, I stayed on them, and I still do, for, you know, years. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, one break, you know, we're going to get another lead detective, and he gets on it and just still nothing, no matter what I tell him. And it really upsets me.
Well, I think you mentioned something important, that, you know, it might just take somebody coming forward to rat on someone else, or coming forward with a tip or information. Are there any websites or Facebook pages, anything like that, for Jesse's case where people can leave tips or learn more about the case or anything like that?
No, I there's not that I know of. There is Detective Moeller that they could get in touch with. And it's Detective Moeller, DeKalb County Police Department. And his number is 770-724-7856. And that's DeKalb County Homicide.
Mm-hmm. And we'll definitely put that in the show notes, and so people can find that when they go to the web page, and if they have information, hopefully they do the right thing and reach out to the police and share that information. How hopeful are you at this point that you'll get justice, and how important is it for you to find out whoever did this, that they're held accountable?
Mike, it's very important to me, because I need justice for not only Jesse, but myself. Because I have gone through hell with this. I'm sorry. It changed my life totally. I'm not the same person that I was. And I just think that it's not fair. None of this is fair. So it means the world to me. And you know, I hear people say, oh, well, you may not ever find out why. I just want to know why, you know, and I want to find this person so they can rot in jail or whatever needs to be done, because he didn't deserve this at all. No matter what he did, you don't deserve something like this.
Yeah. It's very, very scary and very tragic. This all happened in an instant to you, and you're still looking for justice. So, you know, I thank you for sharing your story with us, and I hope you do find that justice, and we'll do our part to get the word out there about Jesse's case.
Okay, Mike, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you once again for joining me for this episode of The Murder of My Family. I'd like to thank Sonny Landon for writing and research assistance in this episode. We'll be back here soon with an all-new episode of The Murder of My Family, and I hope you'll join me for it. But before you go, remember that every murder victim means something to somebody.